Okay, so this is something that is kind of cool, though, which I guess all central, all cryptos are going to be using. It's called, have you seen this one? Crypto credit cards.
Yeah.
It's really pretty cool. It's a 10X technology. 10X is the first and biggest one. So what they're doing is, it's pretty cheap, $15 a year. So according to this, what you do, you just purchase whatever you want in any country that you want with your little credit card, and it just pulls out of your
crypto account
in the currency where you are. Now, that's cool.
And they're doing the same thing with gold.
Yeah. Oh, they are.
Yeah, sure.
Anywhere where there's Visa's except this one, Andy.
Yeah. Bank in Utah, you'll put your gold in, and they give you a Visa card, and then when you spend the money, that's when they sell the gold and pay the obligation.
Yeah, but, I mean, how would you do that for a cup of coffee? I don't get that.
Same way. It's a Visa card.
But, I mean, you can't sell $4 worth of gold.
Sure you can.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, it's not physical. You don't have to hack it.
Oh, it's
right?
All dig.
It's all digital.
Dig.
So this is the thing. Hmm. The dream of the central banks is to convert all of these assets into digital assets
gotcha.
That they control. It's just that simple. So then, you know, doesn't really matter what the populace thinks. As long as they're using their Visa card and it looks the same as everybody else's and it's accepted the same as everyone else's,
but
then people don't have to own gold. They don't have to own crypto. We'll hold the crypto, and you just get the card and draw against it when you need it.
But at the end of the day, there's going to be no difference to most Americans who don't understand what's going on, right?
Correct.
They're just going to think that they're doing something cool. And,
yes.
Right, you know, but it's the same thing, right? Because they own all the digs.
That's right. They have all the digs, right.
They got the digits.
So they have the physical item, and then you have an electronic representation of that item.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's kind of a cool idea. There seems there's a bunch of them out there. There's one called a Monaco, but it's all the same technology. Pretty cheap. Well, I should say that, but $2.50 for every time an ATM transaction you make. But boy, the banks are on this too, because there's a lot of places that are closing branches. Have you seen this? ATMs and branches?
Sure.
Yeah,
don't need
all
them.
Over the country. We don't need them. You don't need these dollars.
Yeah.
Just do the digs thing.
That's
man.
All.
Right.
Here's your card.
Here's your card.
And pretty soon you won't need your card. Why? Well, because your facial recognition, your thumbprint, your voice print, your retina scan identify you uniquely. And so just leave your card at home. Bring your eyeball, your fingerprint, and your voice.
So I guess there's not too many places. There's a few people left at the farmers markets, but not many.
Cash.
Or you can't use cash.
That's
really
the joke. Remember,
yeah, I mean,
Fred,
really, right.
Fred, my partner in South Carolina, and I have been running this joke for 35, nearly 40 years now, and it's usually at Christmas time. Mm-hmm. So we go out together at Christmas, and we do our shopping.
That's right.
Right? And we say always, hey, do you take cash? Now, 35, 40 years ago, they would argue or they would laugh. Of course we take cash. Don't be ridiculous. Yes, we take cash. Or ha 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 ha. Now they answer us with a straight face. Yes or no? No, we don't accept cash anymore. Do you have a credit card? That's what we prefer.
So. Well, financial institutions worldwide are trying to nudge us towards a cashless society, aren't they?
Yeah, 96%, 97% now. We are up
a couple years from now. It'll be what, 98 or 99.
But curiously, in a 97% cashless environment, the Federal Reserve added $140 billion in cash into circulation last year. The stealth.
Well, that's because terrorists need a new car. I'm just kidding.
They need to buy a bomb.
That's
no, it's stealth QE. It allows.
That's terrible. I can't
believe allows them
that.
To increase the money supply.
I can't believe we just said that.
While still appearing to reduce it.
Andy Goss said it. I had no part in that one.
Yeah, that was all Andy. Your email to Andy at andygoss.com. That's Andy at andygoss.com.
Well, I am looking at this gold thing, though. I got this little chart here, baby. I mean, boy, from 71 to today, it looks pretty bully bullish to me, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, even...
Pretty,
you know,
bully there, doesn't
given
it?
Given the short-term correction, it's still... I mean, I was talking to
pretty
clients for the last 10 days, 2 weeks. Clients from 2004 and 2005 who are still in a solid profit position on their gold holdings even after the correction. So it's amazing to me. Coins that I sold in 2005, you know, a $20 gold piece was $600. And today they're $1,600. So even after the correction. So it is, over the long term, it really doesn't matter, these short-term corrections. But if you add at these periods, that's probably the best time to do so. You know, if you're on the dollar averaging pace that you have been and should have been for the last 4 years, 5 years, now might be the time to consider, okay, chunking up. It's just like chunking up, buying something substantial at the low points, just like when you're selling something substantial at the high points. So average in, average out, and double down during the peaks and valleys. Huh.
Cecil, just this email just popped in. I just found your show last week. It's very interesting.
Hi, Cecil.
But if we have, what he says here, but if we have our money in digital currencies, it would be safer than banks.
Because
what about some of the people have talked about bail-ins? Are you familiar with bail-ins?
Sure, I'm familiar with
bail-ins. Have you talked
about
bail-ins in your? Okay, so he's saying, well, why don't I just have it in dig? I mean, that would be cheaper. I mean, not cheaper, but safer than a bank.
Well,
until
the central banks decide to nationalize or, digital currencies. Okay, so you still have that same digital currency, only now it's controlled and issued and redeemed by the central bank. What was the acronym there? CBDC.
CBDC, yeah. Central Bank.
Central Bank Digital Currency. Right. So it'd be the very same thing pre-33, when Americans owned gold and they put their gold in the vault. And then one day the central bank owned all the gold in America because the federal government said, well, if you own gold, you must turn it into the central bank. And from now on, you can't own it anymore. So imagine if they nationalized Bitcoin and you say, okay, I'm going to put all my Bitcoin into a cold storage account and I'm just going to keep it. Much the way people did in 1933 when they took their gold and buried it in the yard and didn't turn it over. Just said, okay, we're just going to leave it buried. They had to leave it buried until 1971 when it was legit again. So could that be the case with cryptocurrencies? Maybe. All I know is that the central banks are lusting after the platform, and they have a tendency when they take over a payment system to exclude all competition. So they will have the monopoly power to issue and redeem digital currency and the ability for you as an individual to issue your own digital currency or to operate outside of the system will be all but eliminated. It will be thoroughly illegal to do so. And this is how I believe they will hijack the crypto markets. And, of course, it's been my belief for several years.
So do you think the banks like Chase and the rest, Citi and Wells Fargo, they're all working on their own blockchain system?
Yep.
That someday that the whole thing will be blockchain.
In a cartel.
In a what?
In a cartel.
And they're all hooked up together?
Yeah, they're all hooked up together. It'll be a cartel, and it'll be controlled by the central banks of the world, and ultimately at the behest of the IMF.
Wow. Sounds like a global kind of thing to me, dude.
It is, and it is. Yeah. They love the technology. They're going to hijack it, no question about it.
Oh, why would they not use it? I mean, come on. And it's going to seem better, I guess, for consumers, right?
Sure,
it'll be faster, easier, cleaner,
frictionless. Yeah, like Elon Musk's Hyperloop for money.
Right, like you can be able to wire.
No friction.
And it would also be more easily trackable, right? And more transparent, even though they'll say it's private.
That's the whole point. It's open ledger.
It's open ledger. You can just go in and see whatever you want to see.
Yeah,
which is all pretty open ledger now, right? I mean, you can't wire $10,000 to your Uncle Irving in Somalia without everybody knowing it.
Right? Oh, no doubt about it. International wire transfers are completely monitored.
Sure, everybody knows.
No question about it.
Everybody knows, yeah. So if you would walk in the bank tomorrow up in Jersey and say that you would like to get $10,000 in hundreds, would they give it to you?
Where? In the bank?
In the bank.
In New Jersey?
Yeah.
Well, they might give it to you, but you're going to make all kinds of lists that day. You know,
really?
Your name will be on all kinds of lists.
No kidding, why?
Yeah. Well, because you've exceeded the $3,000 cash transaction limit that requires a suspicious activity report, or SAR.
Is that suspicious because you want
your money?
Well,
if you've never taken it before, if all of a sudden you show up at the bank and ask for cash where it's not a typical thing that you do. I mean, stores typically show up and say, give me a couple $100 in cash and change for the register. And all of a sudden it's $10,000. Well, that's going to send up some red flags.
I see. Well, you could just tell people that the guy who cut your lawn is very expensive.
Well, as long this is the point, really.
It's very expensive, man.
As long as it's all legit, or as the socialists love to say, as long as you have nothing to hide.
Don't you think it's kind of weird, though, that here we are, that you really have to explain or become suspicious because you'd actually want to go to the bank to get your money? That's a little strange, isn't it?
Well, whose money is it when that happens?
Well, of course.
It's not yours anymore. Well, that's the thing. And as I've said to people many times, the way to really accept all of this and not be paranoid and freak out is to realize that it's not your money. Once you realize
that. You gotta just put that on your fridge, right?
Yeah.
It's not your money.
If you'll realize that it's not your money, then you should have no trouble accepting this. And I'll tell you where I'm really seeing it is in the IRAs.
Yeah.
IRAs.
Yeah.
So as folks decide, wow, I'm going to just pay the 10% penalty and the tax, and I just want my money out of my IRA, they make it so difficult for you to do that. Even with the penalty, it's very difficult to just cash out your IRA and say, that's it, I don't trust the system. So, and Americans have been convinced that, by and large, that this is a safe place to put your retirement savings. I cannot disagree more. That is just the worst thing to do, trust someone else with your retirement money, because goodness gracious, if you don't have a portion of that in real tangible wealth, then that's a risk that you failed to cover.
And then you wouldn't want to just get a bunch of Benjamins, right? Hundreds, and bury those and have stuff, because
they don't
have a best by used by date.
Right. Best if used by.
They don't have those dates. So no telling what they'll be worth.
Dig up your cash and find an expiration date. Oh, it expired. Your cash is worthless now.
So what if you had put a $100 bill in your...
Well, let's go back to 1933.
Yeah, let's go back
All right, so you took you took $120 bills and you buried them in a can.
Yeah.
And then you took $120 gold pieces and you buried them in a can.
Okay.
Well, here we are. We're digging up the cans.
Okay, digging up the cans. $120
bills that you buried.
I got them.
Man, that won't buy anything, relative to what it bought when you buried it. It's not quite worthless, but it's worth maybe 10 cents on the dollar to what you buried.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess so. In 1933, $100 was a lot of money.
Yeah. You could buy a new car. You could buy a Model T.
You could buy a car for $100?
Well, I do believe the Model T was down around that price range.
No kidding.
Yeah, the wage
can't
was...
Can't be, no.
The average wage
You're just
was,
making that up.
I don't know. Look it up.
I'm going to Google it.
What was the wage?
How much was a...
Model T.
Model T.
When the Federal Reserve, 1913.
I got 19. How about 1922? Yeah,
okay, that's close enough. Well, that was the boom. Go-go
assembly 20. Line production allowed the price of the touring car version to be lowered from $850 to $300. What?
$300.
In 1925, at such prices, the Model T at times comprised as much as 40% of our... 1925, $300 for a brand new car?
Yes.
Holy camoly. That can't be right.
That is right.
That's really...
Yeah.
So 1925, if you took your $300... Right?
Yeah.
$300 and put it in a can.
Yes.
Okay, so let's do it with the gold then. So you put $300 worth of gold too?
Yeah, okay. So $300 and $20 gold pieces would have been 15.
Whoops.
$20 gold pieces.
$15, $20
gold. Yeah, okay. Now $15, $20 gold pieces at $1,600, kind of a good average price.
I mean, what they're worth today?
Yeah, that's what they... crack that can open.
Oh, my goodness. So we got to go 15 times 1,600?
Correct.
Gosh.
Guess what that'll
You're looking
buy.
Good here, kid.
That'll buy a new car.
$24,000. Well,
it'll buy a new car.
Well, Bill, I have a new car today.
It'll buy a new car.
Yeah.
Well, it'll buy the equivalent of a Model T, stripped down. That wasn't a deuce.
Now, that's pretty cool, folks, if you want to think about gold. So in 1925, So you'd have $300, which would get you, I don't know.
An Uber ride to Manhattan.
An Uber ride to Manhattan. Or $24,000.
Which will get you a entry level. That's what the Model T was. You know, it wasn't exactly a luxury automobile. You could have bought at the same time maybe a Duesenberg or one of those fancy coaches.
What would they cost? Maybe
$1,200, $1,500. You know, kind of
big
like a
big money.
Right. Triple what a entry level car would cost today.
Wow.
So
pretty cool.
Well, I think I saw the first $1 million car, the McLaren. It was $1 million.
What is that one?
You got me. I'd have to know what's in that thing, but I just caught the headline.
Better have good gas mileage.
First $1 million car. Handmade McLaren.
It's
yeah.
Kind of crazy, yeah.
Well, I guess. Huh? But when you consider, you know, what used to be a millionaire now is a billionaire. And pretty soon we'll have the world's first trillionaire, if we don't already. You're just adding zeros. That's all.
I always liked the silver one would do, because I can remember the day when...
Quarter a gallon.
When it was gas was 1 quarter, 25 cents a gallon. That's when we put in my 52 Chevy we had. 25
and that was good
cents
gas, right? You could get cheap gas for in 1909.
Could you
right?
imagine filling your car up for $2?
Yes. 20 cents, 25 cents
a gallon.
What
if I had one of those quarters today? Would I?
Same thing. So a silver quarter today.
Yeah.
It'd probably be worth over $3. So
about
you could certainly buy a gallon of gas.
Just like you could buy then.
Yes. And this is how intergenerationally we steal wealth. So if you follow the plan that mom and dad taught us, which was work hard.
Save your money.
Save your money. Pay your debts off early and live debt free. So if you follow that plan, then your wealth is very susceptible to this inflation loss. All the money that you save every year, it loses, 5 to 10% of its value at real rates and 2 to 4% of its value at official rates. So if every year your dollar is worth 10% less and you save a dollar for 20 years, well, there you go. It's all been taxed away without your knowledge. This is a hidden tax that Americans just can't quite put their finger on. But when they get their bank statements every month, well, it shows a slightly higher figure than the month before. And so they figure, well, we're doing okay. But if you're losing pace to inflation, why, you're not gaining at all. In fact, you're losing. I had a discussion yesterday about a CD. So you're telling me, Andy, I shouldn't buy CDs anymore? I'm like, why? I call them certificates of depreciation. That's what they are. You put $10,000 in at the first of the year, and by the end of the year, it's worth $9,500. So unless you're making at least $500, you haven't even kept pace with inflation. And then if you do make $500, you get a 1099 and you got to send a third of that to the government as though you actually earned money. So this bracket creep that puts everyone in a higher tax bracket because it takes more dollars to buy the same amount of goods and services, that's not an honest, a progressive income tax is a plank of the Communist Manifesto. That is not the way you should tax your citizens.
So could this be classified as really a big ripoff or a hidden tax or unconstitutional, unethical, and immoral? Or is it just something that we should have known was going on because they told us? I mean, you can go on the internet and see what they do.
Boy, that was a loaded question.
I know what I'm saying.
I'm taking the first.
Would you?
Yeah, because...
Just a real rip? We're
getting
ripped? We're
getting
ripped?
You know, we were given in the Constitution a solid money, a sound money unit, monetary unit, based on silver. A dollar, 0.7734 ounces of silver. And then when President McKinley took office, the gold standard, we went to a 1/20th of an ounce of gold.
Oh, so they switched from silver to gold. Interesting. So at the very beginning, it was 0.7734
ounces of silver
per dollar.
Yep, standard silver dollar, that's it. And we coined those silver dollars and put them out into circulation, sort of freeing the money.
And what year was this?
1792.
So even with the First Bank of the United States that old Mr. Hamilton kind of sold us down the river with the boys, we still had real money.
Yes, we did.
We had real money. Right?
The Treasury minted silver dollars.
And that went on for how long?
Well, until the First Bank of the United States bought the government's shares, and we stopped striking silver dollars in 1804.
That didn't take them very long.
Unbelievable. And we didn't strike them again until Andrew Jackson killed that bank man. And when he killed the first Federal Reserve, the first bank of the United States, boy, we started striking silver dollars again. We started striking gold, $2.5, $5 classic gold coins. And that age of Jackson was the most prosperous era in American history. The period from, let's call it 1830 to 1860, with the dawn of the Civil War. And interestingly, the Civil War was one big race-baiting juggernaut. You know, the idea that the newspapers every day and the abolitionists were whipping up sentiment against slavery.
That was their fake news of the day.
What's the news today? There's slavery going on somewhere. So, you know, eventually, of course, that all disappeared. But the frenzy that was whipped up by the media and by special interest groups who really didn't care a whit about slaves. They were following their agenda.
Sure.
They were funded and controlled.
And when you think about it, Andrew, were the only news really were just newspapers. I mean, that was it.
That's it.
Right? And there weren't that many newspapers.
Look at newspapers from like the 1850s, you know, and then that famous...
I'd love to look at some of those.
Right. Marriage of Lenora in the House of Rothschild. Benjamin Disraeli was there. He was the British Prime Minister at the time. And he quoted the senior Rothschild as saying, "I shall divide the United States in half, Lionel. Half for you, Lionel, and half for you, James," which were his two sons. Now, that might just seem like an empty boast, right? From a very powerful banking magnate, but except when you actually look at Civil War finances and realize that the North was funded largely by the Lionel Rothschild faction of the family, and the Southern states were financed by James Rothschild. So yeah, that's curious. That's exactly how the senior Rothschild thought that it would be divided. And interestingly more, one of the codicils of the Treaty of Peace was that all debts would be paid by the loser. The loser would pay their debts. So it couldn't escape. And just because one side of your family financed the loser didn't mean that you were losing the money. So both sides won when it came to the finance of it all. And also, as a curious point, the Tsar of Russia, who had for years been fighting this privately owned central bank, decided, well, the American Republic has to stand. And so the plans of the British, while we were at war, was to invade and take territory. So in New York Harbor in 1863 sat a Russian fleet. And in San Francisco Harbor sat a Russian fleet just to keep other countries from sticking their nose into an internal squabble.
Wow.
And without the Russians, no doubt we would have lost a great part of our territory. In fact, the plan was that the South would be absorbed into Mexico and the North would be absorbed into Canada. So the British once again stood to gain a large part of American territory from the outcome of the war between the states and the federal government. So, interesting history.
Well, I tell you what, the boys, when they're boys, they just don't...
They don't stop.
They don't stop.
And they paid the Tsar of Russia back, incidentally. That was a blood oath by the House of Rothschild that because the Russian fleets thwarted their plans to divide the United States in half... they said, "We're going to get you," and they did. I mean, they took the Russian royal family out about 40 years later.
We talk a lot about GMOs, glyphosates, and that. As you know, Andrew, we put a video on our website 3-4-5 days ago. It's gone now, but if you'd like to see it, it's called The Hidden Agenda of Genetic Manipulation by F. William Engdahl. I watched the whole thing. I think it's about an hour. If you get a chance, OMG. These guys, the boys, were in there way at the beginning with Monsanto and ADM and all this GMO stuff. very calculated, the whole thing. He's got it all.
Oh, good. Oh, speaking of videos, for those patiently waiting for four presidents.
Yeah, well, we got an email about it. Here, let me read the email, and then you can answer them both. Is just side question, when will the four presidents be available on Netflix? I thought I heard Andy say back in May. It was coming out back then. This is from Kevin.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. While I was in Hilton Head, I received a link to the finished movie, and the editing staff was very excited to show me the finished movie. And I watched it and called them and said, no, it's not finished. I hate this music, and you've got a bad image for currency. So each time I show the currency on the screen so that you can see the difference between a banknote and a United States note, and so several of them were in the wrong place. Oh. So anyway, it's got about another week of editing. I contacted Kenneth Hampton, who is a movie score musician who's also a client, and he agreed graciously to redo the music for the thing, which drove the editing staff absolutely
It always
nuts.
Does.
Oh, God, they screamed. No, my music's perfectly
fine. When you're a big-time mogul like you are, you get to do what you want. That's the deal, right?
I don't know about that, but they're telling me how much it's going to add to the price of the movie. I said, I don't care. I don't care. I care, but I don't care. I'm not going to concern myself with how much it's going to cost to fix what I view as a monotonous error.
Yeah.
And then the movie is an hour 40. I really think it probably should be broken in half into two parts, maybe even three. But at the end of the day, I agreed, okay, it'll go as one movie, but I can't have this monotonous music through the whole thing. People will fall asleep just from the music. So that's being fixed. Thank you, Mr. Hampton. And I look forward to getting this thing back.
So it's about 100 minutes now, yeah?
Maybe. 140, yeah.
Yeah, it might be a little long for a doc.
It's long, yeah. Mm-hmm. But you can't tell the story without delving into each thing. I mean, I go into each assassin and what their motivations were and what the government said their motivations were. I'm telling you, if you examine the history of the Garfield assassination, or more appropriately, the McKinley assassination, and compare it to the Kennedy assassination, it's like it's from the same playbook. I can only imagine.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing. The lone nut, you know, disaffected, communist sympathizer, etc. In the intelligence community, they have a phrase where they sheep dip someone. And I think it has to do with the way they inoculate sheep.
They sheep dip.
So when you sheep dip an operative, you make them look like something that they're not.
Oh.
And so the sheep dipping certainly occurred when they set up Lee Harvey Oswald, for example. Once it finally came time to say he was the assassin, it was easy to point to his Russia connections and his sympathy for Cuba and so forth. So each of these things is also done in the case of Leon Charles Goes, the alleged assassin of McKinley. So it is, again, the parallels between the two are remarkable.
When do you think I'll be able to just like...
2 weeks.
Are the four presidents on
you ever
Netflix?
See that? You ever see that movie Money Pit? Where they're rebuilding a house and Tom Hanks is the lead role and he keeps asking the contractor, so how long is this going to take?
2 weeks.
And two weeks. We'll be done in 2 weeks. And months later, it's finally done. But I will say the heavy lifting is all done and we're really down to that fine tweaking. And Ken DelVecchio, I love you, Ken. He says to me, he goes, you know, Andy, as many movies as I've made, not one of them, I got to the end and said, okay, that's done. It's perfect. Every one of them, there was something I wish I would have changed, but you know, you can't. So at some point, you're going to have to say, this is done, and let us go to press. We've already signed the contract with the distributor, Green Apple. They're chomping at the bit to get it into these digital distribution channels. That includes Netflix, Hulu, you know, there's a dozen of them now. And then, of course, as I said, because I was afraid that this entire documentary would be bought and shelved. So Netflix say, oh, sure, Andy, here's X dollars. We'll take this movie. And then, boom, they put it on a shelf. No one ever sees it again. So I retained the physical rights. So I have the right to make copies and sell them myself.
Oh, cool.
And so that, I guarantee you that will get done, even if you don't see it on Netflix or Hulu or
just
whatever.
Just buy it through you.
I'll have it available in physical form.
Through One Radio Network.
Because I want, yep. Yes. That's a good point. Right. I think I will sell it exclusively through One Radio Network.
Well, you don't want to do that because you'll limit your audience.
Yeah, I'll limit my audience we'll set a time period where it'll be available exclusively on One Radio Network, and a portion of the proceeds will go to supporting you. And
you don't have to do that.
No,
man.
Might as well. Try to talk me out of it. Go ahead. Okay. Give it your best shot.
No, it ain't going
to
work.
No, okay. That's a good way to do that. Thanks. I think I will.
Thank you. Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpani. We have to do a quick break, and then we're going to wrap it up with a few more things. Emails. Previously, we talked with Dr. Rulin Zhu about using Pearlseum on your teeth.
You have to experience it. Believe it.
Yeah, you do. That's what I've been saying to my listeners. I keep saying, can't even explain this. Just buy it. Just click on it. Buy some. Trust me. Just trust me. And you're going to like the way your teeth look. That's what I keep telling.
Dentists, they did an experiment on their clients, and they literally prove, and they literally show the picture every day. You know, when they take it in a few days, their tooth literally become, like you said, like a pearl, and it looks so beautiful and really white and shiny. Yeah, it really works. And it's also scientifically proven by the experiment. And he literally proved it is not only good for your teeth, he also proved it's also good for your gum.
Try some of this Pearlseum. I think you're going to love it. You can try it internally as well. Helps with sleep. Great way to get absorbable calcium, and also on your face. You'll see the green ad there, the beautiful green container. Get the capsules or the powder. Pearlseum. Click and order. OneRadioNetwork.com. Dr. Richard Ulrey, authority on minerals, talks about gut bacteria, making the vitamins, and absorbing the minerals, how it all works.
We need vitamins from our gut bacteria so we can absorb minerals, and then minerals provide a resonant frequency. And those minerals carry these frequencies into the body, and multiple minerals will give you a frequency that allows all of our proteins to have individual distinct frequencies, giving that three-dimensional structure. This is where Wayne's products, Living Stream, and that's the only primary products I carry. When you do a stool test and it says you don't have any bifidobacteria, well, if you don't have any bifidobacteria, you're not going to absorb certain minerals. If you don't have any lactobacillus, you're not going to absorb certain minerals.
Here's an idea of a couple of the Living Stream. Yeah, let me just interrupt you here, Patrick. I want to just add a couple things. Folks email me quite often and they want to know, how come there's all these different products of Living Streams in the store? It's because he's taken some certain unique nutrients and putting it into a probiotic form, which helps the body to absorb them. For example, you have the liquid zeolite, and you've heard of zeolite and what that will do as far as detoxing heavy metals and stuff like that. So that's a great product. Glacier milk, who would know what that is, but it's Shilajit. And guys, I tell you what, Shilajit, if you're having a kind of a slow go down south of the border, Shilajit's one of the most amazing things for that as far as libido on that. And it's also just very strengthening. A lot of minerals in Shilajit. That is the glacier milk. And if you call the number I'll give you, she'll give you this kind of information. Then also the Living Streams Pet Probiotics. Doodle's been getting those in her water. She's doing well. Moringa is a pretty amazing plant that has 40 types of antioxidants, vitamin C, vitamin A, all kinds of cool things, amino acids. It's a pretty amazing plant, and it's known as the miracle tree, and you can actually get a product called Moringa on Living Streams, and alfalfa, which is just a remarkable plant itself. I never really thought of alfalfa as being high in protein, but it's huge high in protein, and it's got lots of minerals. It's Chinese healers have used alfalfa as far back as the 6th century for kidney stones, to improve urinary tract health, detox the body, and harmful substances support healthy menstruation, estrogen properties for girls. Pretty amazing. Alfalfa. I mean, who'd have thunk it? So these are just a few of the different products that Living Streams has. And don't forget about the Perfect Molecule, which is the C60, which is kind of the real bomb fad right now. And we think it's more than a fad. We think it's a trend, and we'll see. Sometimes these fads turn out to be fads, but I think it's a trend, but nobody listens to me. And you can call Marilyn, 360-912-2981. 360-912-2981. And she'll give you more information about all the Living Streams products. And then after you talk to her, please click through on our website so we'll get a commission on that deal. Otherwise, we won't. Okay, it is the real world of money. Man, I am just here in the studio, I'm getting so dry. It is so dry out and hot. I've gone through about 3 glasses of water and I need more. So I'm going to run down and get some water when you answer this email, okay?
Well, of course.
Okay, thank you very much. My question is about the ongoing Treasury auctions. Yesterday, the Treasury auctioned a 2-year note totaling $35 billion worth. Wow. Indirect bidders took 45%. Mm. These are foreign central banks. Direct bidders took 14.29%, or $9 billion. These are the primary dealers. My question is, where do they get the money to make these purchases? Do they just create the money like other loans, or do they draw from the reserves at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York? I guess either way, the results is an increase in the money supply of $5 billion. Am I correct? Also, once the primary dealers buy these securities, what do they do with them? Do they leave them on their balance sheets, or trade them out, or sell them to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York? Would the Fed be buying these now when they are trying to reduce their balance sheet? So this first person is really thinking here.
Oh, yeah, thinking big, yeah, yeah. Right? So in the past, when QE was a-rolling, boy, the primary dealers would have bought all of that, right? Because immediately they would take them over to the Fed and sell them. Where do they get the money? That's the curious question. So the banks have two sources, these primary dealers. One is, of course, the reserves that they have on deposit at the Fed if they choose to draw from them. And these are rather substantial given the amount of QE. The banks, which previously had these notes and bonds on their balance sheets, sold them to the Fed and were flush with cash. And the last line in the movie, Too Big to Fail, was, they will loan it out, won't they? Well, no, they didn't loan it out. They're holding about $2 trillion on reserve at the Fed. And then if they choose not to draw from that, because they do get paid interest on that money, they'll take it from their depositors' checking accounts. And once they buy these bonds, they immediately look to resell them. So whether they sell them to the Fed or whether they sell them to institutions, typically they sell. But given the low covering ratio, right, the primary dealers bought such a small amount this time because the Fed is not actively buying these Treasury securities for their own holdings. So the primary dealers have to think, well, after I buy them, what am I going to do with them? Well, they have to shunt them off to their pension funds and other primary borrowers. That's what they do with the bonds. But without QE and a buyer of last resort, they can't sell them to the Fed. The curious part here is 45% indirect bidding, foreign central banks, foreign governments, think here China, Japan, etc., 9% to the primary dealers. Who buys the rest?
Who indeed?
The Federal Reserve Bank of New York is the primary dealer for the federal government, so they have to buy them. That's the bottom line. So I expect when you see the Fed's balance sheet, you're going to have to see them absorb this extra, what would it be, what is that, about 40% of the $35 billion will wind up on the Fed's balance sheet.
And how many of these Federal Reserve Bank of New York presidents have ended up as Treasury Secretary?
Most of them.
Isn't that curious?
Yeah.
I guess we have Geithner, of course, and Bernanke.
Mm-hmm.
Bernanke was the head of the Fed. Yeah, he was in charge.
Chairman of the Fed.
Chairman of the Fed.
Paulson. How many of them have become? Yeah, Paulson. Yeah, Paulson. Hank Paulson.
And then wasn't also Greenspan, wasn't he?
Greenspan same deal. Was, yeah. Well, they all came from the New York Fed, really.
And then before that, they came from Goldenmy Slacks.
Correct.
So it's kind of...
or one of the other primary dealers. So it's a very tight-knit club.
Yeah.
And this was something that was very concerning to the people at the establishment of the Federal Reserve Banks. Louis T. McFadden really railed on about these folks. M-C-F-A-D-D-E-N, Louis. If you want to look up some of his statements about the Fed, gigantic monopoly and so forth, they have only strengthened their power since that time. And the tight-knit circle of financial folks typically comes from the New York Federal Reserve Bank.
But the system is such and so massive as a giant squid.
Mm.
If President Trump woke up after sleeping a lot, and had way too much coffee.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, well,
that's it. I've had it with these
I think we should just take over the Fed. I mean, just take over the whole thing. Just take over the whole thing. Well, I mean, I guess he could get away with it until somebody figured out how he could stop it.
No, well, here's the thing. The first bank of the United States, which was the first Federal Reserve, first central bank, was given a 20-year charter. And that was in 1792. And when that 20-year charter expired in 1812, and the Congress and the president saw, in fact, there's a great Madison quote about the depredation caused by the bankers and so forth. They slit a man's, no, that was McFadden. Anyway, the people understood what had happened in 20 years.
That we've been had, right?
Yeah, they enriched themselves. And so Madison said, no, we're not renewing your charter. And so immediately we went to war with Great Britain. And that war had been brewing since the previous year when they were pulling over American ships and taking sailors off onto their own ships and impressing them into the British Navy. So the tension from the year before was already brewing as the handwriting was on the wall. Our leaders were already grumbling. Hey, you know, the central bank is making itself rich at our expense. We don't think we're going to renew the charter when it comes up next year. And with that, you know, Britain started smacking us around. So when they revoked the charter in 1812, that was a full-on invasion.
You think?
No.
I remember that war.
We're coming in there and we're taking your stuff. Well, that war was fought rather one-sided, to say the least. This is when Francis Scott Key wrote the Star Spangled Banner, when they were bombarding the hell out of they burned Washington.
We didn't really fight back much.
No, we couldn't. We didn't have an army. We didn't have anything. In fact, the Battle of Bladensburg in Maryland there was, you know, quite historic. At any rate...
Do you think the people knew that it was all about the money in the central bank?
No, they didn't.
They didn't.
They did not.
They just said these rascals just attacked us.
Yeah, what are they here attacking us for?
Because we like Madonna and stuff like that, right?
No, because we have freedom and they...
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's the whole, line. Madonna, so, freedom, Michael Jackson, they...
That's why they fought.
That's so, right. They don't like us.
They fought fiercely, and Dolly Madison had to take the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and hide it in her underwear and flee Washington.
Good for Dolly.
Yeah, if she hadn't done that, they would have burned the critical founding documents of this nation, because they burned the whole rest of D.C. so much that we had to paint the executive mansion white. Hey, the White House.
That's where it came from, yeah.
That's exactly where it came from. And so then the British fought their way all the way down to New Orleans, where they met with Andrew Jackson.
With Andrew Jackson, who already
kicked their butt something fierce. But curiously, the Treaty of Ghent in 1814 ended the war and gave a charter to the Second Bank of the United States. And it, too, had a 20-year charter. And at the end of 20 years, Andrew Jackson said, well, you got
you guys.
To go. And go they went. So when the next time around...
So that would be 18... Right before the Civil War, I guess the next role.
1834.
34 to 54, right?
That was the period of greatest growth in this country. We were on a roll. Couldn't be stopped. And so the newspapers whipped up Northern versus Southern sentiments.
Sure.
And started the course, the draft riots in New York City. You know, there were no draft riots in the South. There was no draft in the South. In the North, you had to really force people to join the army to fight. And it wasn't a popular sentiment. So anyway, we got the National Banking Act. From that, of course, Lincoln's assassination. He let the greenback genie out of the bottle. So it took his assassination to put the greenback genie back in the bottle, the idea that the government...
Because he printed his own money. His own money.
And that was it. He was convinced once this war is over, we're going to be in great shape. I used a few of his quotes in the movie.
No more bankers, right? No more need.
Money will cease to be a master and will be the servant of the people. I used them all because he had some good ones. Hmm. I used the actual letters that he wrote to folks to explain his position. And so now when the Federal Reserve Act, after a series of panics, right? So we had financial panic, one after the other, every 3 or 4 years until finally, like that typical Hegelian dialectic, the American people were saying, enough, let's fix this and fix it once and for all. And they were ready with their plan. Okay, here it is. Here's our plan. And they were both advanced. One side advanced one plan, the other side advanced the other plan. When you put them both together, you look, there's no difference. They're both the same plan. So it didn't matter who won the election in 1912. The bank was going to get rechartered, and it did. The only difference, they gave it a perpetual charter.
A perpetual.
So the
forever,
only way,
forever.
The only way the charter can be revoked now Congress? Is by an act of Congress. And as Mark Twain famously noted, we have the best Congress money can buy to get.
But couldn't the president do like an executive order and say, this is against national security, you guys are killing us, or something like that?
He could try. He
or
could
giant
try
squid.
That.
Or
yeah, he could try that. Mm-hmm. He could try it, you know.
Wouldn't be good.
Surround the
wouldn't
Fed.
Wouldn't be very healthy, however.
No, it probably wouldn't.
Jeez.
He would have to immediately retreat into his bulletproof bunker, yeah.
You'd be like poking the giant in the eye.
Oh my goodness.
They wouldn't even let you on television.
But anymore. I got to tell you, my heart, the cockles of my heart, you know where those are, right? You're
cockles,
a medical man. Yeah,
cockles,
they were warm. I was like, oh my goodness. Did I just hear the president say he's unhappy with the Federal Reserve?
Yeah, they just don't do that.
Oh, no, they just do not
do
say
that.
Anything bad about them.
And he even said it was on the tape, didn't he? He said, you know, the presidents aren't supposed to talk about that. He said, but I don't care.
I don't care. What did he say? I couldn't care less. I like that. He didn't say I could care less. I couldn't care less because my views haven't changed. So for those who wonder,
that's funny.
Why would I support Donald Trump from the beginning of his ascent down the escalator, that was the reason. Tariffs and his view on the Federal Reserve. We don't need them. They're unnecessary. The fact that they're siphoning off $400 billion in annual productive wealth from this economy, even though they return $50 or $60 billion to the Treasury, the rest of it all goes into the pockets of the private banks who get a guaranteed 6% dividend every year that is exempt from taxation.
Wow.
Give me that deal. Yeah. Who wouldn't? Which businessman out there wouldn't want that deal? Hey, Scott from Katy, Texas, I'm going to guarantee your manufacturing company a 6% dividend
tax-free.
Every year, tax-free. How would you like that? Of course, you'd love it. But you're actually producing something. Here, the Federal Reserve is not producing anything. They're merely moving money around, which we could efficiently do within the Treasury Department. So give the power to coin money and regulate the value thereof back to Congress where it belongs. Let's hear no more about the independence of the Fed. Let's kill it dead. The Federal Reserve should be nationalized, and its operations, its profits, and its enormous property holdings should immediately revert to the Treasury, thereby saving us $400 billion in annual interest, probably half the budget deficit
Shot. Well, and also, even the numbers are compelling, and you've taught us over the years, then all of the stuff that they get to do as expenses.
Oh, goodness.
I mean, you have no idea what it is because you can't audit them.
Millions of dollars worth of real estate.
Millions of dollars or whatever, you know.
Yeah, hundreds of millions of dollars comes off the top and gets put into real estate. Bulletproof cars. Learjets. Last time I counted, they had a fleet of Learjets with pilots. They had subsidized dining, pistol ranges. They have executive chefs. They have an art collection that's valued on the books at $30 million at cost going back into the 1920s. Let's auction that art. Let's get it out of those offices. That is not for public consumption. Those are for the private offices of the muckety-mucks at the Federal Reserve. So all of that comes off the top. And
that's before the whole... And I wonder where those palettes of $100 bills come from that tin horn dictators end up with. You know? I mean, where do they come from?
Right from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Yeah, when Obama did his $180 billion deal with the Iranians.
Yeah, where did that come from?
That came from the New York Fed.
Yeah, it didn't come from the Treasury because we didn't have that cash. No.
We're not allowed to issue cash.
Oh, good.
You see, when we print...
oh, good.
When we print $100 bills... We sell them.
I know, this is crazy.
To the Federal Reserve.
Check this out, folks.
For 2 cents each, the cost of printing. So the Federal Reserve pays 2 cents for these $100 bills and then loans them to the president or to the Congress at face value plus interest.
Who does that make
sense
to?
What a deal. That makes sense to me if I'm the Federal Reserve.
You think?
Hook me up. As I've admitted in the past, and I'll admit here again. I'm jealous. I'm jealous. If our money is going to be issued by private parties for profit, then I want to do it. That's it.
Sharon put this on the show page today. Henry Ford, 1922.
Yeah.
It's well enough that the people of the nation do not understand our banking system and monetary system. For if they did, I believe there would be a revolution
right
before tomorrow morning. This is Henry Ford.
Yeah. Well, that's why he was so.
Oh, man.
Anti-Semitic.
Is that the whole thing about Ford? I didn't make that connection.
Oh, yeah.
So they didn't have the Russians then, so they used it.
Then he was anti-Semitic, and he needs to be chastised.
Oh, he's making his cars out of hemp, and people were smoking the fenders and stuff.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Very good. They're making the gas out of hemp, too.
Were they really?
That's why hemp had to be illegal. But that's a subject for another show.
Another show. Okay, we got a couple more emails before we have to go. You mentioned QAnon a while back. And how it was interesting. My jaw kind of still is on the floor. Can you apply what is going to happen to the price of gold if it comes out that the HRC,
Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Oh, has been detained for almost a year for the most crazy crimes ever. I'm betting that even if they show a video of HRC, Lynch, and Bill plotting the death of one of the Supremes, the lefties will still riot. Good for gold?
Yeah. Well, any kind of political unrest is good for gold.
So QAnon says that they're going to get HRC?
That's what they're saying, yeah. Okay. Many have speculated, but good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that as well.
Because it's not just her. Hmm. You know, I wouldn't put this all at the feet of Hillary. She was a willing servant of the globalist masters. and to blame her for it would be incorrect. Actually, Obama was the president of the United States. And, you know, should he have to answer for his high crimes and misdemeanors? Perhaps.
Hmm. Is it any wonder that Mr. Putin was very clear that he wanted Donald Trump to win?
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't pull punches then.
No, he did not.
And the media just thought that was so terrible.
That was terrible.
It was just so terrible.
You meddler. You're meddling in our elections. Why are you meddling? We don't meddle in other people's elections.
Yeah, right.
Oh, wait. Yes, we do.
Oh, wait.
But that's all right. It's okay for us because we're the good guys.
Not only do we meddle, we will replace the dude in there, man.
If we have to, we call it regime change. You can call it whatever you want, okay. But we...
I mean, just for fun, you can do Pinochet. You can do the Shah of Iran.
Oh, sure.
You know, you can do whatever... Gaddafi, you can do Hussein.
There's so many.
I mean, there's just so many. You can do Central America guys.
The Pakistani president.
These were all, you know, look at Ukraine.
Sanders.
We actually changed out the dude, man. We didn't just meddle in their elections. We changed him out.
No, he's got to go. We're going to have to get somebody different.
Americans, we just have no clue.
Well, what I've quoted in the past, and I'll refer again, Smedley Butler. Read the writings of Smedley Butler from the 1920s when the Marines were used to defend the rights of the American Fruit Company, United Fruit Company.
He couldn't believe that he had taken part of this. Right?
The name Banana Republics came during that period where we would go where the fruit was growing and we would install whatever dictators we needed to.
Just put them in there.
Yeah.
Hey, because, George, you want to be the guy?
Yeah, okay, you're the guy. Come on, you're in charge.
Here's some money.
We stole Panama from Bolivia.
We've got some bad juju, man, this country. We better buckle down.
Yeah.
So what if we get all the... This would be a good sales pitch for gold. What if all the bad juju comes back to haunt the United States? What could happen? Buy gold so we could do a commercial.
Yeah, you see $10,000 gold wouldn't even be a blip.
Bad karma.
Because given that our gold reserves have not changed... So if you look at the Fed's balance sheet, you look at the Treasury's holdings, you'll find, although it's the largest gold holding in the world, 205 million ounces, it hasn't increased a single ounce since I've been watching this balance sheet. While our money supply has gone from $1 trillion when Ronald Reagan took office to over $20 trillion today. So there's like 20 times as much money and the same amount of gold.
Yeah.
So you do your own division. Mine tells me that 10,000 an ounce is not out of the realm of possibility.
I remember we did the math one time, and if we did it with how much gold and how much money we thought it was out there, I think it was 54,000.
50 grand.
50 grand, yeah.
Well, so that means, if you divide all the existing money, but
that we know of,
that doesn't count P.
No, it doesn't count potential money.
No.
Who knows? Gold would be $100,000 or something like that.
Sure.
Here's one for you. My 8-year-old granddaughter identity was stolen. Wait a minute. 8-year-old?
Did she 8-year-old. Have a...
I don't get that, but go ahead. I'll keep reading. The way my daughter found out was the insurance company told her in order to renew her policy, she had to prove that her daughter was 8 years old and not 19. And if she didn't give them her Social Security and birth certificate, all that information, they would cancel her policy. Wow. She told them she felt this was very invasive and that she would look for another insurance company, which she did at a cheaper rate. How did this happen to an 8-year-old, and how could you prevent this from happening again? Well, that's
weird. Oh, here
weird.
It is.
That's
Don't get your child a Social Security number.
But it's tough to live like that.
I know it is tough to live. We, of course, had that discussion
that,
because mine didn't get theirs till they were 18
it's
years old.
It's tough for that.
But I would say protect your child's identity the way you protect your own. We're so quick to put our Social Security number on a form.
I don't put it anywhere.
I'm amazed at how people...
I mean, I've seen chiropractors.
I talked about
Blockbuster. They ask you for your Social Security number. I said, what? I don't fill that out, man.
Back in the days of video rentals,
right.
You know, you
That's
go to
right.
Blockbuster,
no
you
got
to give your Social Security number. And the people in line were gladly giving it. So protect your child's information much the way your own is protected. The great product I'm not endorsing by any means, but one similar that might work for you called LifeLock.
Do you think those things work? I hear
Rush. Yeah, they do.
I hear Rush every now and then advertising them.
Yeah.
LifeLock?
LifeLock is one
Stuff
where
like that.
You can't apply for credit in your own name when you have LifeLock on unless you contact LifeLock and give them the codes
cool.
that will
cool.
release the information. So if you LifeLock yourself and your family down, no one can steal their identity. Or more important, I see people holding deeds in their own names. There are guys and gals that scour the court, the county clerk's offices throughout the country, and what they're looking for is a paid-off mortgage. And if you have a paid-off mortgage, they'll steal the entire house out from under you and sell it. So, you know, another one of my debt is a blessing things. Having your mortgage, having a mortgage on your property will actually protect you from this sort of property theft, which is the new way.
Because nobody wants it, right?
Right. Oh, no, it's got a lien on it. I know I can't transfer the title without satisfying the lien. So I'm just going to move on to the next one that doesn't have a lien. And I'm going to steal the whole property. And then I'm going to advertise it for sale. And it happens with second homes and places where people aren't most of the year. And they come back to find someone else living in their house. The house has actually been sold to them.
Mm-hmm.
So the LifeLock is the product. Many other...
I think they have several of them.
Yeah, there
are just two or
correct.
Three or four of them. Yeah.
Other companies. I'm not endorsing this particular one.
Sure.
But the concept is the same.
Yeah. Okay, here's a final one, and I know that you don't like coin questions, but we're going to do it anyway. I'm just being silly. Is it easier for cheap coins to multiply in value versus expensive coins? For example, every collector has a limited amount of money to spend on coins.
Correct.
I was wondering if Andy feels that it's better long-term strategy to buy a limited number of ultra-rare coins versus a large number of semi-numismatic coins. Either strategy could work, but which is most likely to benefit the collector the most? Would a hybrid approach be better? Perhaps Andrew can mention some coins that could fit into each strategy.
Strategery, as my clients know, I talk about foundational coins.
Yeah.
So foundational coins are the semi-numismatic, bulk of the value is in the metal contained in the coin. Here are those silver dollars and the circulated half dollars and the $20 gold pieces and the $10 and $5 gold pieces. And once your foundation is in, okay, you want to put a nice deck on it, that's fine. You want to add some of the really nice items, luxury items, yeah, okay, that's a good time to do it. But to have your portfolio comprised entirely of rare coins is probably not a good strategy, especially for older people. When you find that you need to sell something in a hurry, the semi-numismatic coins fill that bill. So you want a combination, a hybrid strategy, and geared towards the total size of the portfolio. So if your total portfolio is going to be 50,000, you would never put 50 into one coin. If your total portfolio is 10,000, you wouldn't put 10 in one coin. So it's the don't put all your eggs in one basket strategy. Although that advice of do that and then watch the basket, that makes sense. But for me, what I've found through my 40 years of doing this professionally is that having a hybrid, a mix, a blend, diversification within your gold coin portfolio makes sense. That is what I counsel my clients to do, and that's what I think is a wise strategy.
Okay, I was fibbing, but I want to do this because Tom sent this in twice. He wants you to respond. Avid listeners of you, Mr. Goss and Patrick, since 2008,
Thank you.
Buy sulfur and KC iodine. For just for your information, do you know that the courts have ruled, the income tax is an excise tax.
That's right.
Here's the site. Income tax is neither a property tax nor a tax on occupations.
It's an excise.
Common right,
that's right.
But an excise tax, Simmons versus Ahrens of 1925.
Right. That is correct. Income tax is an excise tax that's merely measured by the income. It really isn't a direct...
Measured by the income.
The income, correct.
But income is not taxable.
Well, see, that's right.
See,
and the Constitution...
There I go with my Supreme Court case again, right?
Yeah,
which
right.
Which one? What's in one? You know it.
Yeah.
Supreme Court...
Go ahead, 1894.
I don't remember.
All right, well, then never mind.
Well, what's the name? What's the name?
You're supposed to know the name.
I know.
1894. Pollock. It's
Pollock.
The Pollock decision.
Pollock decision. 1894 yeah. Says income is not taxable.
It's profit. No, income is taxable.
I'm sorry. Income is taxable, but when
what
you,
is it?
But
it's profit severed from capital. So when you put up a dollar and you make a dollar, mm-hmm. the dollar that you made is taxable. That's income.
So if you trade your labor for dollars, that's not income.
You haven't made
to
anything. Yeah. You haven't made anything.
But once again, don't try this at home.
Yeah, no, do not. Do not try this
do
at home.
Do not try this at home.
And you don't want to be a tax protester. Render under Caesar what is Caesar's. And use passive income generators as opposed to income. So, for example, if you buy that certificate of depreciation in January and you put up $10,000 and at the end of the year they give you $200 in income, you have to give $70 roughly to the federal government and then whatever your appropriate state tax is. But if you buy a $10,000 coin at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year it's worth $15,000, you don't owe any tax.
Oh, if you do, if you sell it.
Until you sell it. That's
okay.
Right.
Okay.
So a passive income generator is one that simply grows in value and doesn't throw off taxable income. So that's what you use. You don't want, as Judge Learned Hand put, tax evasion is illegal, but tax avoidance isn't. So a man or woman has the right to organize their affairs in such a way as to pay the least amount of tax. That's not a crime. But owing a tax and failing to pay it or report it, that is a crime. So tax evasion is illegal. Tax avoidance is not.
Big difference.
A very big difference.
Big difference.
Passive income generators are the way to go here, folks. You know, that's why I recommend things like antique automobiles, old guitars, records, coins, Hummels, whatever your collectible might be. If you know a lot about it, stick with that. If you're looking for the best collectible, then you have to find the rare coin markets, the most widely organized, the most liquid, the most readily tradable rare coin, rare collectible item are gold and silver American coins.
I fibbed again because I want to do this. Alice just writes in, what about the $12 billion that Mr. Trump wants to give to the farmers?
Yes.
With Andrew's conservative take on things, does he think this is proper for the taxpayers to give the farmers $12 billion because he puts tariffs on China?
A good short-term fix. You know, until China comes to the table and hammers out a fair trade agreement for the president to take some of the money that's being put in terms of tariffs on their imported goods and then just hands it over to the farmers who are being hurt by unfair tariffs put on their exported goods, it's a good short-term fix. It's not a long-term fix to the problem. And I don't think it'll last more than 6 months. That's about how long it'll take.
What are they going to do, just give the farmers money? Or what
to
do?
Yeah. I mean, they've been paying them not to grow crops for a great many years. Right?
Yeah, right.
So now we're just going to subsidize until the, you know, as we've discussed with the human body, right? When we block off an artery, the body makes another one. Until we make those extra trade channels, he's going to fill the stopgap with some tariff
money. So in other words, if a farmer or soybeans or somebody like that is going to get clobbered with this,
correct,
then they'll get a subsidy.
Yes.
And of course he's going to do it, and listen, in states where they need to, you know, win in November, too.
Oh, come on. But
I'm okay with that. If I was president, I would do it, too.
I'll watch that, but I...
wouldn't you?
There aren't that many
states. You'd be kind of stupid if you didn't.
There aren't that many blue farming states, okay?
Oh, that's true.
So it's just not that many.
That's true.
And farmers, by and large, understand what's going on here. You know, these commodity folks, they have a tendency to understand what's going on. How many of them will switch from soybeans to a domestically needed product? Well, I hope a great many. We have too many farmers growing soybeans. GMO soybeans on top of it.
GMO soybeans. That's all they got is GMO soybeans.
That's right. So let them go to a more wholesome crop. Let them start growing more farm-to-table stuff, wholesome food. Wouldn't that be a great unintended consequence, a good side effect? You get these farmers to stop growing these GMO soybeans that we export to other countries that then sell it back to us and swear it's organic and non-GMO, or we produce something domestically consumed. That would make more sense.
We communicate, Andrew, fairly regularly with Scott Tipps, who's the Health Federation Council, and he's the only... He is the representative that goes to all the Codex meetings around the world to keep an eye on who these dudes are. Mm-hmm. And Codex is this spooky
Codex Alimentarius,
UN thing. That, but I really asked him about who the countries, and he was telling that Russia is one of the coolest countries as far as understanding the health of these things. He said they're
very
supportive. He said Australia, New Zealand, the countries that you would think would be, like, you know, so cool. He said they are the most clueless countries. He said, I can't believe these people in Australia, New Zealand, with, you know, with all the lambs and sheep and organic stuff. If the people knew what their representatives were doing at Codex, they would just throw up. But he said India is actually pretty good, too, that these people are into it. And that more and more people do not want these GMO soybeans either. I mean, more countries are just stepping up. No, thanks. We don't want them.
Yeah.
You know, we just don't want them. Cause
all this animus towards the Russians, I don't know where the
know where it's coming from.
Well, I just know that we probably have more in common with the Russian people than we are. Our similarities are much greater than our differences, and we need to work them out.
Right.
And the only way we're going to do that is by talking.
No. So, if you talk to the Russians, you are a treason communist pinko.
Back to that again?
No.
I thought that was over with Ronald Reagan. Tear down that wall, Mr. Putin. It's gone.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Just well, amazing.
Here we are.
Well, there's already another, I just saw another $20 billion that the EU is going to do right in the middle of the meeting.
Sure.
So this is no currency war.
Yeah, no. No, yeah, no currency.
No war here.
They will force the Federal Reserve to weaken the dollar. Force them to do it. Either, you know, it's if we don't, we die. It's just that simple. If the dollar continues to get stronger, we will die. That's, I mean, there's just no other way to put it.
I'm going to just Google it. What's the value of the euro dollar today? It's, I was wondering what it was. Boy, Google's running slow here. Is it my internet connection? Oh, yeah, 117. Whoa, man. Mm-hmm. I've not seen it this low for a long time.
It's been a
while. We really need to go to Italy and do some pasta, dude, at 117. Oh,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, tourism booming, I bet.
I bet it is, yeah. All right, kiddo, what's up with you today at SDL Inc. in Hawthorne, New Jersey? And also, oh, where they, by the way, are taxing your tap water, just in case, you know, I mentioned that before. Yeah. And also Hilton Head. What are you going to do today? Anything? Got anything on sale or anything?
Oh yeah,
specials?
No, so
anything?
We're digesting
a blue light special. Or
remember that big coin collection I bought months ago, some weeks ago. Yeah, it seems like it. What was it? Anyway,
time flies.
They're starting to flow back in from the grading services, and the last big raft of them has been entered into inventory. So I'm calling my clients today. And giving them an opportunity to acquire some of these, no way else to put it, world-class rarities. That's what we have.
Is that what you do? Is you call your clients first?
Of course.
Okay, you call your...
They get first crack. And then new clients, people that have never bought from us before, I hate to put it that way, and I've said it before on the show, even if you just call and buy one silver dollar, you're a client of the firm, that makes you eligible to be on the list. Because there's not that many. When last I checked yesterday, there were only 8 what I would call world-class left, and... Today, that number's probably down to 4 or less. I've been in here 2 hours. It may even have sold out. But what I did do was I loaded up. I put my money where my mouth is. I loaded up on $20 gold pieces. I've really got the biggest inventory of $20, those foundational coins we were talking about, where their value is really closely tied to the price of gold. With gold at the bottom here, I loaded up. So I have 20s galore. And I have $10 Indians, $10 Liberties, $5 Indians, and $5 Liberties. The biggest holding that we've had in 7 years. So now's the time, folks. So you'll probably be getting a call today if you're a client of the firm. And I would guess if you're not a client of the firm, but you've approached us about investing, you'll probably get a call about these generic coins, these $20, $10, and $5 gold pieces. If you get a chance at one of these rarities, though, especially if you already, and a word of caution there, if you don't have the foundational coins, there is no chance that you'll get offered a rarity today because my brokers know better.
It's just not a good idea.
No, they know better. They know I will hit the roof. You know, it's like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, no,
Don't do that.
So don't offer these $20,000 and $30,000 coins to folks unless they have a sizable and reasonable portfolio of the lower-priced coins because, as the previous writer alluded to, yes, I believe the cheaper coins have a greater potential to increase in value. So... anyway,
when's the last time you've heard, ladies and gentlemen, that somebody's saying they have a limited value of something? I mean, there's not a limited value of anything out there today. Everything, they got more than they want.
How many do you want?
I mean, is there a limited value of iPhones? Nope.
Yeah, no.
Limited value of bandwidth? Nope. No. Limited value of whatever.
Yeah, this is not the Dorito. Crunch all you want. We'll make more. Yeah. We can't make them. The only way we can buy them is to offer higher prices. Now, the ANA, the American Numismatic Association World Fair of Money, that's our annual convention, goes off the first week of August there in the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia.
You going over?
I'm going over.
Philadelphia.
Absolutely. And so there's an auction. There, it's packed, jam-packed with one-of-a-kind items, and I'm going to spend until the checkbook is empty, and then I'm going to max out my credit cards, wipe out the credit lines.
Really? You're going for it,
Every hidey hole I can find. Hey, because once that week is over, The coins are gone. There's nothing coming up until middle of September. Huh. So I either get them now or I don't get them
sell,
at
right?
all. Yeah, or I'm paying higher prices as I got to buy them secondhand from somebody who bought them at the auction. Yeah. So
this might be too much information, but just for fun, if you don't want to answer, don't answer. What's the most you've ever spent for one coin for your firm?
Oh.
Do you mind saying that?
$400,000.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. 400 large?
Yeah.
Wow.
We have a client who's interested.
What was that coin?
It was a $4 Stella, a gold piece.
$4 gold piece for $400,000?
$400,000. When was that? Oh, 3 years now.
3 years ago. What would it be worth today?
Well, if it came out in auction.
Yeah.
And
if you brought it to Philadelphia and auctioned it off.
Yeah, 5.25, 550,
really?
600.
Really?
All you need are two nuts. So I'm in line here.
All you need is two wackos
two nuts,
like you.
Yeah,
right?
Two nuts. I'm in line to buy that 54S. And I have a bidder who's willing to spend up to $5 million.
What? Wait a minute. You have somebody
who's willing to spend $5 million
for a coin?
A single coin.
He's
a billionaire, to be fair.
You think? He's
got a B behind his. But he's interested in this one coin. The one we talked about two months ago that surfaced, the 54S $5 gold piece. We're having difficulty in the negotiation here, almost to the point where I'm just ready to tell him to, just go to the auction company and make your own bid. And he wants his privacy, doesn't want to reveal himself. Okay, I'll act as his agent for a couple of percent, but I'm chafing at the bit here. I just do not like the whole arrangement. So, and there's a possibility.
Not fun, huh?
It's not fun. Yeah, there's a possibility, though, that could become the biggest coin that the firm has ever handled. Mm. The thing is, though, see, that $400,000 coin, yeah. I bought that on spec, meaning I didn't have a client for it when I bought it.
Oh, you just paid 400 large?
Because it was a great coin at a great
you
price.
You think? At 400?
Right? And, yeah.
Well, I'm sure glad you know your stuff, man.
I was sweating bullets for a minute, but this is a coin that I'm merely fulfilling an order for. There's no speculation involved.
No.
Would I plunk down $5 million of my own or somebody else's money that I borrowed to buy this $5 million coin on the speculation that someone else is going to buy it from me? Probably not. Mm. It's just too big for the average investor. For the typical investor, my limit, those six figures, once we get into that range, then it's a dicey situation. The sweet spot at 3,000 to 5,000 seems to be, for me anyway, a place where I can find a lot of coins that have potential. And that really feeds into the previous writer's question, right? So what are the odds that $5 million coin is going to go to $10 million versus the odds that the $3,000 coin is going to go to $6,000?
Right.
Yeah, I think it's much more likely that the $3,000 coin will go to $6,000. Just basic supply and demand. The reason that the $5 million coin is a $5 million coin is because there are only four. That's it. Four. One, two, three, four. That's a rare coin, Bubby.
You think?
Yeah.
Kind of fun. What fun. Philadelphia in August. Well, that should be, should be good.
All right. And going straight from there to Music Fest in lovely Bethlehem, where we've taken a steel mill and made it into a venue for concerts.
You have?
No, I didn't. Obviously, there's Bethlehem Steel.
Oh, Bethlehem Steel.
Produced all of the steel for all of the skyscrapers and all of the boats and everything that was made in the 40s and 50s and 60s closed when cheap steel started flowing into this country.
Yeah.
And with such a negative chance of ever making steel again, ever restarting again, they've made it into a gigantic concert venue.
Cool.
So, well, I guess I'll...
Who are you going to see?
Anyone who's there. You know, there are over 400 free acts, free bands. It's the largest free music festival in the country. Now, to be fair, there are some headline acts that they charge a modest fee for, but anybody and everybody. The Philadelphia Funk Experiment. I love the big horn bands, you know, and there's so many of them. There's everything. I mean, literally music for every taste. And if you live in the area, check out the World Fair of Money in Philadelphia. And right after that, head over to Bethlehem, short hour drive away, and go to the Music Fest with a K. Music Fest is the largest free music festival in the United States and the oldest.
And so when is that? That'll be at the end of the
same week. Same week.
That's fun,
huh? Yeah, yeah. And then my birthday, August 15th. So that whole week I'll be traveling. I'll be in close contact with the office. And if you have any specific coins that you're looking for, let me know what they are. Obviously, those who know the ones that we buy know, as every dealer in the country knows, we'll be bidding actively and higher bids for all of those coins. Coins like the Hawaiian, the Alabama, the Missouri, you know, these are all coins on our list, and we will buy them in any quantity. They just don't exist.
Well, I know you don't like talking about buying coins, so
I'll stop.
Andrew Goss's number, if you'd like to talk to him, 800-468-2646, 800-468-2646. All right, kiddo, great show. Really enjoyed it. We'll see you real soon.
Talk to you soon.
And we're going to do tomorrow, and it's going to be the Masseys. Yeah, it's Richard Massey, Meridian Grace. So get in your questions now, and we appreciate your ongoing support of all of our fine vendors or products that we promote. Anything that you want, if you have questions about anything, email me, or experiences with all these things that we've been talking about. I'd love to hear more. Have you tell me how you like some of the new things we've been working on, the Pearl, the Living Streams, or the Blue Shield, or Sulfur. We always like Sulfur testimonial, whatever you use, good, bad, and different. I'd love to hear from you. Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. So I love you all very much. See you tomorrow, and may the blessings be.
From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.